Welcome to Trial Recap, the State of Florida versus Charles Adelson, a new series that delves into the murder for hire of FSU law professor Dan Markell and the first trial where an Adelson family member is involved. Charles Adelson, or Charlie, is Dan Markell's former brother-in-law. Charlie is a wealthy periodontist from South Florida. Charlie's sister, Wendy Adelson, is Dan Markell's former wife. Wendy is an attorney, and at the time of Dan's murder, a clinical law professor at FSU. Dan and Wendy's contentious divorce and custody disputes, including their post-divorce litigation, are a major component for the state's theory on motive. Now, this case involves extensive investigation by law enforcement, including cellular data and cell tower dumps, an undercover bump operation, and additional surveillance and wiretaps. The case also highlights the lengths to which individuals might go in bitter custody disputes and complexities of pursuing justice in cases involving familial conflicts and murder for hire schemes. In today's episode, I focus on the background facts of the case as they are known just prior to Charlie's trial. And we will cover what we learned in Charlie's trial as we go through the trial recap series. In today's video, I'm keeping the information high level as I intend to dig deeper in specific videos. In upcoming episodes, I will cover final pretrial motions, including the order to show cause regarding the investigative subpoenas issued to Donna and Harvey Adelson, jury selection, the trial itself, and events occurring right after the verdict is reached. The murder. Friday morning, July 18th, 2014. It is a beautiful day in Tallahassee, Florida, 78 degrees with scattered clouds. FSU law professor Dan Markell is up early. He has had custody of his precious young boys this week, with the exception of Wednesday night, when his former wife, Wendy Adelson, had an overnight visit. Dan gets his boys ready for preschool, secures them in the back seat of his black Honda Accord, and they leave his home in the established Benton Hills neighborhood. On the way to the gym, Dan calls Wendy to discuss their oldest son's school for the upcoming year. Earlier that week, Dan learns that Wendy signed their son up for a new school without discussing it with Dan, a technical violation of their marital settlement agreement. It is also another example of parenting issues Dan is having with Wendy at the time of his murder. Dan is awaiting a hearing on two counter motions to enforce their marital settlement agreement, one regarding parenting issues and the other regarding financial issues. In both motions, Dan is seeking contempt and sanctions. Wendy does not pick up Dan's 9:02 a.m. call, and he leaves a voicemail regarding the subject of their son's school. He tells Wendy he's going to the gym from 9:15 to 10:30, but is happy to chat or meet with her about the school situation. He suggests that maybe they could go for a walk to discuss the matter. 9:12 a.m., Dan arrives at Premier Health and Fitness. He is not aware that two individuals from South Florida, Sigfredo Garcia and Luis Rivera, are following him in a rented silver pine mica colored Toyota Prius. When Dan enters the health club, the gym surveillance cameras capture the Prius moving to different parking spots while Dan is in the building. At 10:30 a.m., Dan leaves Premier and drives to his home on Trescott Drive, which is again located in the established Benton Hills neighborhood. Premier's surveillance video shows Luis and Sigfredo following Dan in the Prius, with Luis driving. On the way home from the gym, Dan speaks with a teacher at the school where Wendy has attempted to enroll their child. The call begins at 10:48 a.m. At one point in the conversation, Dan asks the teacher if he can hold for a second, that someone he does not recognize is in his driveway. Luis Rivera has now pulled into Dan's driveway right behind Dan's car. Sigfredo then jumps out of the Prius, approaches the Honda Accord's driver's side door and shoots Dan Markell twice in the head. Sigfredo runs back to the Prius, and Lewis pulls out of the driveway quickly to exit. The teacher Dan is talking with is still on the phone when Dan is shot. The teacher hears a loud grunt and labored breathing. He tries to call Dan back, but the call goes to voicemail. The teacher then texts Dan to see if he's okay. Between 10:52 and 10:55 a.m., Dan's next-door neighbor is sitting in the front living room with his wife. He hears a loud bang, so he gets up to look out his front picture window. He sees a light-colored vehicle, possibly a Toyota Prius, pulling out of Dan's driveway. Dan's neighbor goes to check on Dan, but when he nears Dan's garage, he hears Dan's Honda Accord running and assumes Dan is fine. So he returns to his house. However, when Dan fails to back out of the driveway within a short time later, the neighbor goes to check on Dan again. The Honda Accord is still there running. Dan's neighbor enters the garage, sees the broken driver's side window and Dan bleeding. He calls 911 at 11:02 a.m. Police and emergency personnel arrive and Dan is transported to a local hospital. Where's Wendy? On the morning of Dan's murder, Wendy's day starts out around 8 a.m. Wendy's mother, Donna Adelson, contacts Wendy briefly at 8:09 a.m. At approximately 8:20 a.m., a Best Buy Geek Squad employee arrives at Wendy's house for a TV repair appointment. During this appointment, the Geek Squad employee informs Wendy that the crack in the TV screen is not covered by warranty. As mentioned, Dan calls Wendy and the call goes to voicemail. At 9:12 a.m., Wendy's brother, Charlie Adelson, calls her but it goes to voicemail. Wendy calls Charlie back at 9:19 a.m. and they talk for around 18 minutes. After the Geek Squad employee leaves, Wendy works on a research paper, talks to some friends, and sends some emails and texts. She calls Dan back at 11:42 a.m. and leaves a voicemail. At around 12:30, Wendy leaves her house in her burgundy Honda minivan to meet some friends for a last-minute lunch. She makes a few calls on the way to lunch. She also goes out of her way to stop by an ABC Liquors to purchase a bottle of Boulet Bourbon for a friend's Stock the Bar engagement party she is attending that evening. As she makes her way to ABC Liquors, Wendy drives near the crime scene. Wendy often takes Trescott, the street where Dan's home is located, and her formal marital home as a shortcut. She is in the vicinity of Trescott at approximately 12:40 p.m. At 12:49 p.m., Wendy buys Boulet Rye at the ABC Liquors on Thomasville Road near Dan's home. After leaving ABC Liquors, Wendy gets some gas, then drives to the Mosaic restaurant where she meets up with her friends. She arrives at Mosaic a little after 1 p.m. Soon after, law enforcement locates Wendy at Mosaic and she agrees to accompany them to the police station. When she is at Tallahassee Police Department, the lead detective informs her that Dan has been shot and he will not survive. Wendy speaks with police from about 2:45 p.m. to 7:50 p.m., although some of this time is spent making arrangements to pick up Dan's children from preschool. During the police interview, Wendy makes statements that the murder could have been arranged by someone on her behalf without her knowledge. She tells police that her brother, Charlie, had joked about hiring a hitman to kill Markell, but it was cheaper to buy her a television as a divorce gift. Wendy also tells police that her former in-laws might suspect her of murdering Dan because the court had denied her ability to relocate to South Florida with Jan's children. During her interview, Wendy also informs police that her parents are very angry at Dan. Sadly, early in the hours of Saturday, July 19, Dan Markell dies from the injuries he sustained during the shooting. A memorial service is held for Dan on Sunday, July 20th at a local synagogue. Wendy's parents speak with the lead detective at the memorial service and agree to meet with him before returning home to South Florida. The following day, Monday, July 21st, the lead detective contacts Wendy, but Wendy tells him that they have a bad cell connection. Less than 5 minutes later, Wendy's attorney calls the lead detective and informs him that Wendy and the children have left Tallahassee with her parents and are en route to South Florida. The attorney requests that he be contacted for any further inquiries. Extensive investigation. Through extensive investigation, law enforcement eventually identified the Toyota Prius using surveillance videos, including those on city buses. Police identify unique features of the subject Prius, including a SunPass transponder on the windshield, a missing tow hook cover on the front bumper, and a black passenger side mirror casing. In particular, the SunPass transponder leads investigators to review Florida Department of Transportation records for the relevant dates. The review of those department records directs them to a Prius that had traveled to and from South Florida on the relevant dates. Law enforcement then obtained the rental contract for a 2008 Toyota Prius, which was rented by Luis Rivera on July 15, 2014. A second telephone number with the word brother matches Sigfredo Garcia's phone number. An anti-theft GPS device installed on the Prius confirms the vehicle's physical location for intermittent times during the rental, including locations in Tallahassee. Bank records from Luis Rivera's checking account reveal an ATM transaction on July 18th at 6:46 p.m. Police obtain security video from that drive-through ATM, which shows Luis in the Prius obtaining cash with Sigfredo right next to him. Cellular data records, including cell tower dumps, indicate location data for Sigfredo Garcia and Luis Rivera in Tallahassee during their July 16 to 18 trip, as well as their locations upon returning to South Florida. In their investigation, police learn of the only tie between Professor Dan Markell and the hitmen, Sigfredo Garcia and Luis Rivera, and that is Catherine Megbanawa. At the time of Dan's murder, Catherine, or Katie, was also dating Charlie Adelson, Wendy's brother. In addition, Sigfredo Garcia is Katie's on-and-off long-term boyfriend with whom she shares two young children. Telephone records further reveal contact on one occasion between Sigfredo and Katie's phones and a phone registered to Harvey Adelson, Charlie and Wendy's father. This occurred on July 1, 2014, just weeks before Dan's murder. It is this call that helps law enforcement link an Adelson family member to a telephone number that was in that cell tower dump in relevant locations in Tallahassee during the time of Dan's murder. Cellular telephone location data also shows the movements of Katie, Sigfredo, and Luis the evening of July 18, when Sigfredo and Luis have returned to South Florida. Cellular location data shows Katie, Sigfredo, and Luis in the same area for a period of time, during which Katie has telephone contact with Charlie Adelson. Katie's last call with Charlie is at 10:20 p.m., and law enforcement believes that Katie then travels to Charlie's home in Fort Lauderdale, where she stays the night. The next morning, Katie, Sigfredo, and Luis meet up at Luis's home, where the hit money is exchanged. Show me the money. In addition to reviewing extensive digital evidence, law enforcement reviewed the financial records of the alleged co-conspirators. They learn that after the murder, Sigfredo and Luis acquire several vehicles. 2 months after the murder, Katie begins receiving paychecks from the Adelson Institute, which are hand-signed by Donna Adelson. Katie's bank accounts reveal a significant increase in cash deposit after Dan's murder. In the 12 months prior to the homicide, Katie makes cash deposits totaling around $15,000, but $10,000 within 4 months of Dan's murder. In the 12 months following Dan's murder, Katie makes cash deposits totaling around $44,000. In addition, as early as September 2015, Katie begins using a 2001 Lexus LS430 sedan registered to Harvey Adelson. On January 23, 2016, the title for the Lexus is officially transferred to Katie. Law enforcement also believe that Charlie provided financial assistance to Katie for a breast augmentation.
The bump.
It's April 2016. Although law enforcement has made good progress in the Markell investigation, they are stalled and need more evidence before proceeding. In order to facilitate communications amongst the alleged co-conspirators, investigators decide to employ what's called a bump operation. A bump operation is whereby an undercover agent will make contact with Donna Adelson in reference to Dan's murder. Now, in connection with this upcoming bump, on April 7, 2016, law enforcement obtained a court order authorizing wiretaps of Charlie and Katie's phones. Tuesday, April 19, 2016, the bump day. It's a beautiful day in Miami Beach, with partly cloudy skies and a high of 81 degrees. Donna and Harvey Adelson are enjoying semi-retired life. Harvey's working part-time at his dental practice, the Adelson Institute, in Tamarack, Florida. The couple recently sold their family home in Coral Springs and are renting a condo in the Icon, a luxury high-rise in South Beach. Donna and Harvey especially enjoy spending time with Wendy and Dan's boys. Their elementary school is even walking distance from their luxury condo, and Donna and Harvey happily assist Wendy with picking the boys up from school while she is still at work. On this early Tuesday afternoon, Donna leaves her condo to pick up Dan's boys from school. She walks down the tall steps leading to the Icon, dressed casually in black shorts and a sleeveless top, wearing a black crossbody bag. As she approaches the crosswalk, an undercover FBI agent approaches her. It's 1:47 p.m. The bump encounter is being recorded by the undercover and from law enforcement team across the street. The undercover calls Mrs. Adelson's name, asks her how she's doing, and then he wants to give her a piece of paper he's holding in his hand. The piece of paper contains a news article regarding Dan's murder. It also has the undercover's phone number and the amount $5,000 handwritten. Donna appears startled at first, and the undercover reassures her not to be scared. He then tells Donna that his brother needs help just like their family is providing for Katie and Tuto. He also mentions his brother helping the family out with their problem up north. Donna says she doesn't know what he's talking about, and the undercover gives her the piece of paper and says this will explain.
Black shorts. What is it?
Pause it for just a moment. All right, so on the left side of the screen, we've got two different things going on here. Can you explain what we're looking at?
Yes, on the left side is a body recorder that the undercover agent was wearing, and it has video and audio on it. So what you're hearing is audio coming from the undercover agent and his video. On the right side is a separate video taken from surveillance agents that were in the area watching.
All right, so the woman we're seeing on the stairs here, is that Donna Adelson?
It is, and she's exiting the Icon, which is on South Beach, her condominium. That's the stairs coming from her condominium toward the street.
All right, please proceed.
Oh, Okay, bye. Excuse me, Mrs. Adelson? How you doing? Just want to give you this. Listen.
You're scared.
No, don't be scared. Listen, just want to let you know that we know that your family has been taking care of Katie and her friend Luto for quite some time after your problem up north has been resolved. And I want to let you know that my brother, he's incarcerated. He helped your family with this problem you guys had up north. And we want to make sure that he's going through some rough times, and we want to make sure that you take care of the, of what he's going through, the way you're taking care of Katie and Tuta. Well, this will explain it. Thank you.
Madonna places that piece of paper in her black crossbody bag without giving it a look. She walks quickly to the boys' school, and the surveillance ends. Soon after Donna arrives back to the condo with Dan's boys, she calls Charlie. It's 2:09 p.m. Donna asks Charlie to meet her regarding some paperwork that was hand-delivered to her outside the condo. Charlie asks if it involves him or others, and Donna whispers, "Well, probably both of us." Charlie asks her to repeat herself, and Donna says, "Probably the two of us." And probably have a general idea of what I'm talking about. She tells Charlie it isn't something that she wants to discuss on the phone. Charlie calls Donna back at 2:35 p.m. They discuss logistics on meeting and Charlie bringing cash to take Donna out for dinner. Charlie calls Donna again at 3 p.m. Although he tells her not to talk about anything in the condo, he asks her to describe the undercover. Donna tells Charlie that the undercover also mentioned an ex-girlfriend. Charlie asks Donna what the letter is requesting, and Donna says, "This TV is probably about five." 5,000, Charlie clarifies, and Donna confirms. Now, Charlie is also trying to reach Katie Tuesday afternoon. He finally reaches her at 4:27 p.m. He briefly explains the situation with his mother, and that he is going to meet her in person the next day. Katie agrees to meet Charlie the following afternoon after he meets with Donna. Charlie meets Donna at the Icon the next day a little after noon. They walk to the marina near the Icon, and they sit closely and talk at a remote table. This is all near a restaurant on the water called Monty's. Unfortunately, none of their conversation is successfully captured. Dolce Vita. After meeting with Donna, Charlie travels north to Sunny Isles Beach and to a strip mall where Katie is working at a local real estate office. They first meet in his car for about 10 minutes, then enter a restaurant in the same complex called the Dolce Vita. Their conversation is captured by undercover agents, and the audio recording is later enhanced by the use of an expert. Here are a few portions of the conversation that are particularly interesting.
had made that any of this, they would have already knocked on their door. And the problem is, even if they bug this, even if they bug your whole car, they would have no control. But even if they... So my point is, how do you get people to talk? You put a smoke ring, and then you get all the cockroaches to run out. There's smoke in the house, And everyone's running, and everyone's talking, and you throw a smoke ring. What do you think? What I'm saying is that this person is not going away. They came very equipped with details. Where did the details come from? I don't know. The details, I don't know. Let me ask a question when everybody's there. And you just take any party. It's not like you're driving around in a family, cruising around and making a mega yacht, you know. That's something he must have been from at some point. Because otherwise, you'd have no idea. I'll go to that. That's without even saying, I don't need to say that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know it, I don't even have to, I don't have to sit here and tell you what I would do. I just show you what I did. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know how I am. I look for things to do. You don't ask me to sit. I'm the one who's like, hey, no, his birthday's coming up, I got you. You know, I'm the one who's like, anything I can, you know, you don't ask. I'm the one who's like, hey, I'll sell you the lessons for a very good price. I know you're having more problems. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm the one who, I don't have to tell you. I show you.
Arrests imminent. In the subsequent weeks after the bump, law enforcement intercept a number of calls from Charlie and Katie's phones, most notably between Charlie and Donna, Charlie and Katie and Sigfredo. Code words are used in an attempt to disguise the conversations, including references to real estate and patients. Follow-up bumps are also used to elicit further conversations, including a letter the undercover sent to the Adelsons, following up on that initial meeting with Donna, a call made by the undercover to the Adelson Institute, which prompts Charlie to call the undercover, and an early morning text to Donna, which prompts Donna to call the undercover. On May 24, 2016, law enforcement attempts to interview Sigfredo while he's at work. Simultaneously, Katie is contacted by law enforcement at her home that she shares with Sigfredo, but she never opens the door. Sigfredo denies to law enforcement that he had any knowledge about the murder and tells them he wants to speak with his lawyer. That evening, Katie and Sigfredo visit a Walmart and purchase two burner phones. They leave their residence in North Miami that evening. The next day, May 25th, 2016, Sigfredo is arrested for Dan Markell's murder during a traffic stop. In June 2016, Luis Rivera is also arrested for Dan's murder. He is then serving time for an unrelated federal charge. Then, on September 30, 2016, Luis provides a proffer where he admits to the crime, including Sigfredo and Katie's involvement. In exchange for his cooperation, Luis is sentenced to 19 years in prison after pleading guilty to second-degree murder. His second-degree murder sentence is concurrent to the 12-year federal sentence he is already serving. Katie is arrested on Saturday, October 1st, 2016, in a strip shopping mall in Davie, Florida. She's driving that black Lexus when she's arrested. In October of 2019, Sigfredo is tried and found guilty of Dan's murder. He is serving a mandatory life sentence without the possibility of parole, plus 30 years for conspiracy, Katie is tried at the same time, but her case results in a hung jury. On Thursday, April 21, 2022, Charlie Adelson is arrested for Dan Markell's murder. The next month, Katie is retried in May 2022 when she is found guilty. She is currently serving a mandatory life sentence without the possibility of parole, plus 60 years for conspiracy and solicitation. Incarcerated in Leon County Jail, Charlie files a motion for pretrial release, and an Arthur hearing is held in September 2022. The judge denies Charlie's motion, and he is held without bond pending trial. In fall of 2022, Katie provides two proffers in connection with Charlie's upcoming trial. And then, 18 months after his arrest, Charlie's case is finally set for trial in October of 2023. But not without a little bit of last-minute drama. That's next in Trial Recap, The State of Florida versus Charles Adelson. Thank you for joining, and please consider liking and subscribing. I hope to see you in my next one.